with my employees. I look for employees that are leaders. I don't look for employees that look at me to be a leader. I don't know who says this quote, but I believe in it. Leaders breed leaders.
Sure.
I believe that that is a critical component of being self-reliant, is getting other leaders involved and bringing people that can lead in certain aspects of a practice. I believe that can help become more self-reliant.
This is The Relentless Dentist, the show that launches dentists beyond their excuses and into their epic life. Each week, we interview thought-provoking guests that will give you the courage to develop the dental practice and life you dream of. Now, here's your host, Dr. Dave.
All right, Relentless Dentist, let's get started. This is your host, Dr. Dave. Super excited to have a friend on the line, Jordan Comstock. How you doing this morning, Jordan?
Doing good, David. How you doing?
I am good, thanks. So Jordan and I are kind of part of the rather small but growing podcasting fraternity in dentistry.
yep.
So I had a fun conversation with him and Ben on their podcast, Navigating Dental Insurance. And the thing that I noticed right away when I started talking with them is that we shared some common values and some common passions. And listeners of the show kind of know that I have a thing for the underdog, the David and Goliath, if you will, and maintaining independence and really facilitating the dreams that dentists have when they go into dentistry, making sure that that career path provides them all that they hope for and more. So Jordan is the CEO of Boom Cloud Dental Membership Software. On that podcast, we talked a little bit about just the battle with I call them sometimes the bully, because I think bullies pick on the weak, and the weaker you seem, the more you get picked on. And Jordan has helped provide a method in fighting back and creating a practice more on your own terms, like the practice that we talked about, the practice of your dreams that creates your epic life that we talk about on the Relentlessness podcast. So anyway, excited to have a robust conversation about where you've been and where you're going and the services that you provide for dentists today. So thanks again for joining us.
Oh, anytime. I love doing podcast shows. That's why we started one, right? They're fun.
For sure. So my favorite part about talking to new guests is kind of understanding their story, their journey. We believe that success leaves clues. And so although you're not a dentist, I think your journey through kind of multiple careers and pivots will lend some ideas and thoughts to listeners today. So tell us a little bit about how you ever even got started in the dental industry.
So I basically grew up in dentistry. My grandpa bought a dental lab in like the 1950s. My dad got wrapped into it when he got older. And then my mom is an office manager for a pediatric dental office. So grew up in dentistry, you know, not the dentist part of it, but managing, you know, a dental office and seeing like, well, I would always go to my dad's lab and play with the plaster and cast rings and things like that. But how I got started, I never wanted to do anything in dentistry, right? Growing up, I'm like, oh, that stuff drives me crazy. Right. I'm a big musician. I love music. I still do to this day. And I wanted to do something with that. But as I got older, I actually lived in Brazil for a few years. And then I came back around, I think, 2008. And the economy just was horrible. And I tried finding a job. And I have a twin brother who we're both in the same boat, right? Tried finding a job. It was so hard. And then my dad's like, hey, I need help with the lab. And if you join me, you know, there's some opportunities to owning a business. And I've always loved business and I've always wanted to own a business. So I'm like, okay, I mean, that sounds cool. So I started the lab that way, right? In the middle of the recession, which was the hardest time to try and grow a lab, right? Where technology changes were happening and just things were changing. The economy was weird and it was hard, but I stuck with it for about 7 years. And what made my switch during those 7 years, I love marketing. I love research. I love finding problems. And I think I kind of drove my dad crazy at the lab because I'd find problems and then I would figure out solutions to solve those problems inside of the lab. So I could tell right away that I was an entrepreneur.
Right.
and my dad wasn't. He just wanted to just maintain the lab. And I'm like, well, I want to do this and that. And one of the questions I remember asking him at an early age in my early 20s, I'm like, so how much do you make from a crown when you sell it to a doctor, and he's like, oh, I have no idea. Oh. I'm like, are you serious? And it just my curiosity as a young entrepreneur, I just started doing research, and then it took me a week or two to crunch all the numbers and figure out his costs and what he would make, you know, his profit margins. Mm-hmm. And found out that he had a few customers that he was losing money on. I'm like, dude, you're paying them $10 to make a crown, right? Things like that. And I'm like, you got to drop that customer or raise their price, because this is just not good business. So during my time at the lab, I had a ton of experiences in learning how to manage business. And I read book after book after book about business, and still do to this day. I can't get enough of business books. But as I was there at the lab, I noticed a problem with dentists when they would call in, and they would vent to us because we were their friends, right? We have a lot of dentists that are friends still to this day. And they would always talk about how annoying dental insurance was. And I'm like, man, there's got to be a better way out there. And my mom was the insurance coordinator at the time for a pediatric office. So I just started talking to her and asking, like, and she would just light on fire when you said the word dental insurance, right? Right. And I knew there was a problem. And then I would ask her, so I'm a twin and my mom is a twin, and her twin is in dentistry as well. So I'd call my aunt and ask her, and she'd light on fire as well. And then I had a few other of my friends who had moms that were, you know, insurance coordinators or managers. And I just started asking questions and just being really curious about the problem that I kept hearing about in the dental industry. And sure enough, one day I walked into an office that we worked with at the lab, and I noticed that they had a membership program. And this is years ago. And I'm like, and it's right after I got done reading a book called The Automatic Customer by John Warlow. It's one of my favorite books. It's called the little sentence below the title says, creating a subscription business in any industry.
Interesting.
So my ears just went up. I'm like, whoa, what is this you guys are doing? Like, I've never seen this in dentistry before. And I just got even more curious, and I started asking more questions and said, why is this beneficial to you guys? And they said, oh, it's amazing because we create a loyalty, like it's a loyalty program, and we get we have higher case acceptance rates because of the loyalty, and we got the recurring revenue. And it just, I'm like, this is awesome. I love to see this in dentistry, because after I read that book, it just really motivates you on how to create a strong business, especially with the financial model of recurring revenue. And sure enough, I started asking, I'm like, so how are you guys managing this? And at the time, I not only was doing lab stuff, but I was studying marketing and web development at one of the local schools here. So, because I knew I wanted to, I love technology, and I knew I wanted to do something with it. And sure enough, I'd found that the practices, and these were multiple practices I was talking to at the time after I found out about the membership programs. And most practices started saying, yeah, we're just using Google Docs to manage it. I'm like, Google Docs? I'm like, really? I'm like, there's got to be a better way. So that's when I sketched up my design for the first version of Boom Cloud, and I started working on it. I got some. It took me about 6 months to find some co-founders, which was a challenge in itself. Mm-hmm. And I continued working in the lab and started doing, you know, more and more stuff on with Boom Cloud on the side. And sure enough, one day or one quarter, the lab just was struggling. And I helped grow the lab, and it was struggling for some reason. The lab is a weird market, the lab industry. I'm going to be really open with that. It's a very, very interesting industry, but we had a bad quarter, and my dad calls me, and he's like, I don't know how I'm going to pay you. And I'm like, oh boy. I had my first daughter. Well, I only have one daughter, but I had my first kid, right? So I felt a lot of pressure in that call. And the good news was I had another side business called Rocket Fire, which was a subscription website business. And it was bringing in money, but not enough to support me, you know, fully. Mm-hmm. And I thought for a few minutes, and I knew I believed in Boom Cloud so much and wasn't a ready product. At the time, I thought, oh, it'll be done in 2 months. It took a year so my dad calls me and I say, you know what, Dad? He's like, I think I'm going to let Dave go, which was one of our oldest lab technicians there. And I'm like, he's in his 60s. He won't be able to find something, you know, it's going to be hard. I'm in my mid 20s. I can figure it out. So I told my dad, I'm like, don't worry about it. I got something on the side and I'll make it work. Little did I know that was going to be the hardest year of my life, you know, where it got extremely hard, where I was afraid that I was going to lose my house. Mm-hmm. And things like that. But I was able to push through it as persistent and stubborn as I can be sometimes. I was able to push through it and still believe. I'm a very optimistic person. So despite going through that year of like hardship and challenge, I believed in my product. I believed in the concept. And I just stayed persistent and I found ways to make money on the side. And then all of a sudden we launched Boom Cloud a year later. And I was like, oh man, this has been the hardest journey of my life. I took one breath. And then the first month we had signed up more dentists and I made more money than I ever did at the lab in 1 month. And it started growing month after month after that. So, but that's kind of my journey of how I got into dentistry. And a lot of people, I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs here in Utah because there's a lot of them here, right?
Sure.
And a lot of them just think, oh, it's like overnight success. I'm like, no. This has been one of the hardest journeys that I've ever had to deal with in my life. Now it's obviously paying off, but in the early days, like I thought about giving up multiple times, but you know, I just kept pushing and I was persistent. And then one of my big thoughts were, you know, the law of the harvest, you know, you reap what you sow. And that's sure enough, that's what happened, you know, and I feel very blessed and fortunate to have been able to keep my house and grow, have a growing successful company. But it, you know, there was some sacrifices and hardships there, but I would do it again if I was put in that same position because it's been very satisfying and rewarding for me and my family. But yeah, that's my story there. I've never gone too much in details there on a podcast. So there you go, David.
I love it. And
gets a little bit more detail there.
I love the candor because I think too often my beef, I think, with the dental industry is that you look at these quote unquote overnight successes, but you don't know their full story or they're not sharing their full story.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you go to these cosmetic lectures and see a dentist's best work and then you feel inferior because you're like, oh, my veneers never look like that. And, you know, you don't really know what it took to get there. And once you peel back and really find out the true story, you realize that most of our biggest successes come out of the deepest struggles that we have. I mean, as you were speaking, absolutely. I was thinking about how closely our stories paralleled. I started my practice in 2009. Terrible timing, terrible location, resort location.
Yeah.
Had vicious ups and downs in the seasonal economics of it all. And I remember you were talking about your daughter. I remember literally looking down at a baby boy. It's my son, Bennett, who's now 7, and saying, as I'm like literally trembling inside for fear that I was going to lose it all, that I was going to crash and burn.
Yeah.
Saying,
it's the worst feeling ever.
Saying, I don't know how I'm going to figure it out, but I'm going to figure it out. So as you pointed out, we're always looking for more resources, but sometimes the pathway is based on resourcefulness. And so I appreciate you sharing that story today.
Yeah. And another thought that just came to me is I'm a big believer in just self-funding, whatever you do, right? And in a lot of cases that can be hard and challenging. And it was in the early days, but I had investors coming to me as well, but they, in the early days of Boom Cloud, and my mindset is just, I can do this. I don't need outside funding because of our model, right? Mm-hmm. And I just believed in myself. A lot of people think entrepreneurs like me, that they call them bootstrap entrepreneurs. We're very, very frugal type people. And we learn to figure out how to, you know, get the bang for our buck with, you know, with little money.
Sure.
And I feel like that those skills has helped, because when I was at the lab, those are things that we managed that I was able to learn too, because my dad taught me how to be really frugal. And his business was self-funded as well, which you don't hear a lot these days. You know, you get, especially in the software world, you get a lot of companies that will go raise round these huge rounds of funding, but then they're not profitable, and they then burn out after a few years, right? And that's not what type of business I wanted to build. I wanted to build a self-sustaining business that could provide value to customers, because that's really how we've grown, is through our customers. We don't get funding. I love the customer-funded business. There's something to say about that when a company is focused on that versus trying to get those investors involved, right?
Usually.
I think that's another mindset that I feel is important in any business, really, but especially in the software world.
I love the scrappiness. So many times I'd go to bed at night thinking, who can I call and borrow $20,000 from? And where can I go and get an associateship? And I would have done anything at the moment to get out of that mess. But the long road, the long journey, the lessons I learned now in hindsight, I wouldn't change for the world. It's really helped define me as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And help almost like realize that challenges are going to come again, and I'm more readily prepared for that challenge.
Yeah, you got an awesome skill set now that when those challenges come, you can, you know, ride the storm out. It's an awesome skill set, I believe. And I think every entrepreneur, and that means, you know, dentists out there that own businesses, that I consider them entrepreneurs, you know, I think that's a very important skill set to learn and understand the importance of.
Awesome. One thing that I wanted to make sure we touch on before we really dig into membership plans is a conversation that we actually had offline. We were talking an interesting conversation that we had on your podcast and before the show was about the downward pressures that we receive from PPO contracts, and it seems like it's never improving. And you may get negotiated on one contract, but then get cuts on another contract. And also the movement of large corporations that are maybe more dollar driven than patient service driven, and how that may impact our practice. So would you mind talking a little bit about what you were calling self-reliance and the importance of that in dental practice?
Yeah. So I'm a big believer in self-reliance. Now, it doesn't mean that you have to do everything yourself, right? It just means you understand your system or your engine, your machine, right? Which is also known as a dental practice or a business, right? You understand what it takes to make that practice or the business successful. You know, because if you're relying like a lot of dentists do, they rely on PPOs to maybe help them grow their practice, which in a lot of cases, not necessarily a bad strategy, but in the long run, it could end up being a bad strategy. But in my mind, I think that dental practice owners should have that self-reliant mindset, which basically means I need to understand my business. So if something happens, if this PPO, you know, if they increase or they decrease what they're going to be paying me, I can understand how to go and market and get a new segment of customers, right? Sure. Or patients. So I believe in self-reliance. And like I mentioned earlier, a little bit, you know, earlier about like getting funding from venture capital firms and things like that. Still this day, I get calls from venture capital firms, and I don't want anything to do with it, because I've built the company so that it's taking care of itself. It's self-funding, it's self-reliant, right? And even with my employees, I look for employees that are leaders. I don't look for employees that look at me to be a leader. I don't know who says this quote, but I believe in it. But they say leaders breed leaders.
Sure.
And I believe that is a critical component of being self-reliant, is getting other leaders involved and bringing people that can lead in certain aspects of a practice. I believe that can help become more self-reliant. And then I do believe in the concept of recurring revenue, that helps a lot. If you think about in dental insurance company, their model is recurring revenue. That's why they've got the biggest buildings down the street. I'm sure in your town, you've seen that, right? I've got five insurance companies down the street here from my office. I look at it, I'm like, I know exactly their business model. I know why it works, right? So I think the financial model with recurring revenue is a component of becoming more self-reliant, especially in the dental industry, because you've got patients that already have that mindset that, oh, I got to pay a subscription or a monthly fee to get access to certain benefits discounts. So I think dentists can take that advantage of building that. I know I believe Dr. Phelps has been on your show.
Sure. Good friend of mine.
Yeah, he's a good friend of mine as well. And I always talk about him because I love his mindset. But in his first year, he signed up around just under 1,000 patients to his program, which would do wonders to a lot of practices. If you look at the numbers, I think it generates, if you do the math, it generates between like $30,000-$35,000 a month in recurring revenue. And that's a way to become self-reliant on a financial level, right? There's obviously like leadership levels of self-reliance and finance, which I like finance. So, but I believe in self-reliant and being self-reliant. And I believe that dentists should be more be thinking this way more and more, because then they'll be able to reduce dependence on third parties like dental insurance and other companies that may spring up. But I believe that dentists should be reliant on their own system, their own team to grow and flourish. And that's kind of my mindset there. So there it is, David.
I love it. And I thank you for sharing that, because even myself, I'm pretty independent and I believe I can make anything happen that I want to make happen. Yeah. But sometimes, at least for me personally, I got so entrenched in the PPO world that I forgot that there was a way out. And it took this silly chart audit. They said, the company said that I was performing two surface fillings or something like that. And so that I had to show evidence of all these things that they were legit. So I was submitting x-rays and diagnodent readings and intraoral photos. And it was just like this big nonsense thing of over.
Yeah.
I thought I was doing the right service, because when in doubt, I always treat more conservatively. So if I'm looking at a tooth and saying crown it or do a filling, I tell the patient, give them the choice. They usually choose the more conservative thing. And then I prep them that we may have to do a crown later on. And it took this audit for me to realize, like, listen, like I don't have to play this game. This is a choice that I've made, and I can make a choice to start to work my way free of it. So I think the message of self-reliance is something
that we
forget in dentistry, because it becomes business as usual.
Yeah. Yeah. And just another thought, we talk about this on our podcast show all the time. So we got the insurance companies that are policing the dentist, right? But who's policing the insurance companies? Like, seems like they're getting away with a lot of interesting things here. The stories I hear, and I'm sure you've had some, but it's like, who's policing these guys? Because they're not dentists, but they're telling dentists what to do, or rejecting claims that a dentist or even a doctor in a medical practice that say, yeah, this patient needs this. So I don't know. That's my mindset there with dental insurance as well. Like, who's policing these guys? Like, nobody. It seems like nobody. So,
I couldn't agree more. Well, let's talk about how we can build that self-reliance in our practice and push back on some of those downward pressures. I'd like to get into kind of the finer components. You probably see varying styles of membership plans. I first remember hearing about membership plans really as I was starting my practice. I think the first membership plan I had ever heard of was Quality Dental Plan by Dr. Dan Moret, eight, 9 years ago. And ever since then, it's really exploded in varying directions. And some people build their own, and some people have somebody else build it. Some people rely on a service like you have to help automate it, streamline it, make it so that it's more of an auto-renewal model. So the first question I have for you is more along the lines of a pricing strategy. And are you seeing more success if office bills monthly or if it's an annual renewal?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. And that's a question we get every day here. So I'm going to say it depends. Depends on the market, depends on the demographic you're targeting. Like, for example, Dr. Phelps, I call it the Dr. Phelps model, where he charges the yearly. But the demographic that he's targeting is people that are getting ready to retire or people that have retired, that can usually afford that, right? But here in Utah, we've got a handful of practices that have that same question, but the demographics here in Utah, there's a lot of young families here with a lot of kids, right? So a monthly membership program has worked fantastically for some of the practices here. So it really depends on the demographic you're targeting. Now, either one, I think, works fantastically. If you're going to do a monthly pricing, I always recommend have in the agreement, because it's always good to have agreements when you're signing up a patient to something, right? In the agreement, I would put it as a year term agreement, but they're paying for it monthly. And that's what I recommend, because you don't want you know, patients to come in and find those holes or the weak spots in the system and say, well, I'm going to cancel. And the doctor just did a cleaning on me and I only paid $30 for it. Right. So, and those things are easy to get around, but those are a lot of concerns and some questions I get all the time from dentists and practice managers about like the monthly model. But I think they're both great and they both have their places depending on the demographic you're going to be marketing to, you know. And then another thing I like to add in there is I wrote an article about just pricing strategy in dentistryiq.com. In the early days, I'm not saying as much now, but in the early days when I started talking more and more to dentists, they would either charge really, really high or really, really low. And it's like, okay, so you want to lose money. And I believe there's various marketing concepts, right? There's And I get what some of these dentists were doing. The lower model, they were trying to do a loss leader, which works. But I'm back to the self-reliant. Well, you're basically going to lose money to attract patients. I don't believe that. You should be able to attract patients and make money, right? We're in business and we want to stay in business. Sure. But obviously the loss leader, there's a strategy to that. I've never done that, so I'm not the best one to talk to about that type of strategy. But we had dentists that were just charging too little, you know, and I'm like, dude, you're going to be in like the rat race with this. It's, you're going to try and grow and grow and grow it, but it's not going to benefit you, you know,
like maybe if $10 on a crown.
Exactly. And that's kind of where my mindset stems from, right? Because it's like, well, I don't want to lose any money on anything I'm trying to do because just to try to attract people. I don't think that's very smart. Now there's companies out there that are really good with doing that and they have a model to support that. But I think I don't believe that dentists should be able to do, they don't need to do that. You know, I've looked at profit margins in a lot of procedures that a dentist does and you guys have healthy profit margins and a discount would suffice. Not, don't lose money, right? So that's a pricing strategy that I see all the time. And then just too high. That's obviously you're just not going to get many signups. And a lot of practices out there will come to me. They're like, well, we've tried it years ago, but we were charging $600 a year. I'm like, well, that's your problem. You're charging what insurance companies are charging when you don't need to because you're making profit on other aspects, right? Obviously, you should make a profit with your membership fees. That's because you want that recurring revenue or that passive income from those fees, right? Those membership monthly or yearly fees. But I think, you know, some people get a little too greedy and they just want to build the model solely to an expensive membership, right? Which works in some cases I've seen, but you know, the typical pricing that I see that works really well on a monthly standpoint is between $25 to $40 a month.
Okay.
For a standard plan. And then on the yearly, Dr. Phelps plan has worked fantastically. It's $300 a year. I've even seen $400 a year work, but you know, it just varies depending on demographics and who you're just marketing to. But those are some of my thoughts on pricing strategy. And the last thing, just to close this topic, I think it's very smart for a practice to understand when they get a list of benefits that they're including in their membership program to understand the expenses to perform those benefits.
Sure.
Right. So let's say you bulk all your benefits together and the total expenses are $100. Let's say, just say, keep it simple. Well, you don't want to charge $50 a year, right? Right. You're losing money, right? Mm-hmm. So it's always good to understand your profit margins. And we do have some calculators on our website that are free to use that help you understand procedure profit margins. And then depending on your model, we have a break even analysis calculator that a practice could use to, you know, see, depending on their financial model of the membership program, they could see, you know, how many patients they need to break even. Most of the time, though, they just need one because it's paying, one patient can pay for everything, right? So those are my thoughts. Yeah, just understand your costs because that's another problem I see a lot in dentistry. A lot of practices don't know their costs, and there's various amounts of ways to understand your costs. I know Dr. Mark Costas in his podcast, he speaks of a way. I'm a detailed guy, so I like to know what each procedure costs and what each procedure the profit margin sure. in each one, you know. So I recommend understanding that with the list of benefits you're putting in your membership program, and you'll be good to go, because you can say, okay, well, it's cost me this. I know if I charge at least this, I'm going to be breaking even each patient that signs up. So I believe that that's critical and very important when deciding pricing for a membership program.
As you were speaking, I think of a couple of psychological components. One of my fascinations is why people do things and you know, messages that we're sending subliminally, particularly to our patients. And a couple of things that I've noticed is that dentists a lot of times tend to devalue their services, and then you can only expect your patients to do the same. So if you're undervaluing the membership plan or over calculating the discounts from the beginning, or even calling it a discount can sometimes be a detriment versus a savings.
And my mindset on that, don't call it a discount plan. Call it a membership plan, a savings plan, or loyalty program. I hate the word discount.
Yeah. Well said. Right. And the other component is that there's a lot of patients that will come in. I'm sure you see, the listeners will see them all the time, because I certainly do. And they'll say, they'll be a little bit apologetic, and they'll be a little bit ashamed. They haven't been to the dentist in 5 years, so there's some disrepair there. And they'll say, I just got dental insurance. I haven't had it for the last 5 years. So there's this mindset that they need some sort of benefit, to the point where people will go out and buy these horrible individual plans.
These crap plans.
Where they pay more than the benefits they would ever receive, with all sorts of waiting periods. They're just horrible.
It's ridiculous.
It fills a psychological need for the patient.
It does. And that's a benefit, you know, for practices selling membership programs to their patient base, because we know that over half of the United States doesn't have dental insurance, right? But everyone thinks that they need to have some sort of, you know, program to go to the dentist, which is funny, because I've never had dental insurance ever in my life. And I've always just walked into my dentist and they've taken care of me, right? And I've always paid cash. I'm a fee for service patient. So and I think that though that mindset of the patient could be used to the practice advantage to enroll more patients in their membership program and build that self-reliant practice, right? Without dental insurance, because you're not having to submit claims. It's all managed in-house, right? So it's in my mind, it's like the perfect model to help, you know, attract patients, especially the uninsured or even the fee-for-service type patients.
The other psychological thing that I've noticed, this is my hiring model. I find the nicest people I can hire and hire them.
Yeah.
And with that comes a level of compassion, because I can't train that, and that's what I want for my patients.
Absolutely.
But the downside of running a business with those types of people is you'll get questions in the middle of the day of, Doc, she doesn't have insurance. Should I take a pano? And my answer is, do they need a pano? So having the membership plan available automatically fulfills that need for the patient, thinking, okay, this is going to be driven by some sort of savings. And it gives them, I can't think of literally a single patient that we've offered a membership plan to that said no. And largely it's a no-brainer, but largely me as the doctor and my team believe that it's a true service to the patient. So that being said, it works for all parties. It's a true win-win.
Yeah, I call it a win-win-win, right? Sure. Or a win-win. I throw a third win in there all the time. It's win. It's lose, win-win, or win-lose-lose with an insurance company is what I say, because the insurance company is winning and everyone else is losing. That's what I say. That's why I say the 3-1. Yeah. But I find it interesting. One of my co-founders has had a lot of dental work done, and he is with an insurance company that we all know. I'm not going to say their name because I don't know if they will send me a cease and desist. All right. You never know. But he had to get a couple implants. He's had quite the adventure this year. And he's on a dental insurance, on a certain dental insurance. I almost said it. Oh my gosh. Basically, he's paying so much because he's hit his maximum and he's still paying his monthly premium from the insurance companies. But now he's paying everything out of pocket because of that. He's hit his maximum, right? And I think there's a huge flaw in the dental insurance industry with that. And it's obviously so they can make a profit, but it's a flaw in our system here, because patients will need more work than others, you know, in most years. And I think a membership program helps with that, because you guys don't cap the patient, what discounts they can get, right? The discounts are unlimited. And I think that is the premium model in the industry, because then patients feel like they're getting taken care of with however amount of the treatment they need. That's why I'm a big believer in it, and seeing so many practices, you know, have success. I'm just a big believer in making sure the patient's getting taken care of, but at the same time, making sure the practice can stay in business, right? And that's why I think a membership program could really help with the model of insurance these days.
Yeah, it's the fact that we can even call that insurance, or people are willing to call it insurance, is mind-boggling to me, because I live in a very active community, and I've seen, as you can imagine, all sorts of injuries that involve skiing, snowboarding, mountain biking, climbing, and you know, you take a hit to your front four incisors, and your quote unquote insurance company may help pay for one, and by that time that one's fixed, the rest are on you. So to call that insurance relative to what I have for my home or my car or my health is a misnomer completely.
Yeah, it's just a capped discount plan is what it's a capped discount plan.
So let's talk a little bit about, I know in some markets or some industries it's called forced continuity or the power of auto renewal. I know BoomCloud lends to that. I don't have anything automated, and I know there's lapses in when we're charging patients because it's annually based, and you know, if they're a couple months late for their preventative visit, then you may be losing some potential income there. Can you talk about the power of that?
Oh yeah. So I encourage everybody to read the book, including yourself, Doctor, The Automatic Customer, Creating a Subscription Business in Any Industry. Now, John Warlow is the author of that. It's one of my favorite books to this day that inspired me to help create BoomCloud and other companies that I've created in the past. And I think the importance of predictable recurring revenue is so overlooked in the dental industry. I've always asked myself, why are some of these big tech companies, since I'm here in Utah and there's a ton of them here, especially in the dental space, Why are these guys, you know, when they sell their company, it's like multi-millions of dollars. Why is that? Again, it's my curiosity coming out all the time. Why is that? And when I did a valuation of the dental lab, which has a very similar model as a traditional dental practice, I'm like, why if I do a valuation on this that I don't get the same results, right? And it boils down to predictable recurring revenue. And I think also known as passive income or residual income, right? There's a lot of names for it. I like recurring revenue because it just sounds cool to me, I guess. But or subscription revenue, right? That's another form of it. But I believe, and then the finance industry believes, that when a business has predictable recurring revenue, meaning you can say next year, I'm guaranteed to make X amount, right? Or next month, I'm guaranteed to make X amount, right? This increases the value of a business because the risk is lowered to manage that business, right? Because obviously money and cash flow is what makes a business valuable. So the importance of automating membership fees and having a system to manage those is extremely important, because let's say you're getting ready to sell your practice, and you have another dentist that wants to buy your practice, but when you can show them that you have predictable recurring revenue, the risk to buy that practice is lower, which means the price to buy it is higher because it's a healthy business, right? So I believe in the power of recurring revenue, and I've seen it myself with my business when I left my dad's business because of financial reasons. And keep in mind, I managed a traditional business that had that transactional revenue is what I call it. No subscription revenue whatsoever. And it's very hard to manage compared to today with our business is a subscription business, right? It's very easy to budget for those types of businesses, which I know that word sounds boring, but it's a critical word. It's a critical task to do in any business, right? I can budget now. I've got departments that I budget for. My marketing department every month has an amazing budget that I can reuse every month on a consistent basis, right? So, and other reasons as well, I could look at, you know, what I need to do for HR for my employees, and I have a budget for it that's recurring and predictable, right? So I believe in the concept of recurring revenue because it makes a business more valuable, easier to manage on a cash standpoint. I'm not, people sometimes be hard to manage, so I'm talking about the cash standpoint. So I believe that it's critical to have a recurring revenue component in a practice. So you can actually say, well, next month, I know I'm going to at least make this much, right? And there's a lot of value, a lot of relief as well when you're managing a business like that, because as we all know, managing business isn't the easiest thing to do in the world, especially managing cash flow. So I think I'm a big believer in creating that predictable cash flow, right? So it's easier to run. So when we create membership programs, which is a fantastic way to generate that recurring revenue, make sure we've got that system in place to help, you know, manage it and auto-renew it and give you reports to understand when you're going to get that revenue again. You know, I think it's so critical. So read the book, The Automatic Customer. It's a lot more interesting than me just talking about it. It also talks about, you know, valuation of businesses, where a company that has, like I said in the beginning, a company that has recurring revenue, instead of getting like a discounted cash flow, like a traditional practice gets when they sell it, it's a multiplied cash flow. So, you know, most practices, and I can't remember the exact numbers. I think I was talking to Mark Costes the other day, and he said that, I can't even, I might butcher this, but I think he said it's like 80% of the cash flow. So it's discounted, you know, 20%. But when you have recurring revenue, it's multiplied. Yeah. So that's the benefit of having recurring revenue and having, you know, growing a membership program or any other type of program that you create, growing it to a point where it's has, you know, a good amount of revenue coming through it, predictable recurring revenue, that is, so that you can get valued and then that you can stay sane, right?
Managing a business. I love that concept. I think it's so foreign for most dentists to realize that
there can be
revenue coming in when you're in Europe for a week. So
yeah, you go on vacation for a week and your membership program has that predictable revenue, you know, stream. It's so vital, especially, a lot of doctors that I talk with, when they start implementing this, they're more energized because they're like, oh my gosh, I had no idea that I could do something like this or have a financial model like this in my practice. And it's one of my favorite topics. And I worked for the longest time to try to implement something like that in the dental lab, and I just couldn't figure it out. It's just the dentistry, you guys got lucky, I guess, that you can do something like that, right?
And so, thank you for the book recommendation. I've been such, like you mentioned, such a consumer of content, podcasts, Audible books.
Yeah.
Many I start, some I don't finish. I'm familiar with so many. Very rarely do I hear of a book that I've never heard of. So I look forward to checking that out.
Yeah, get that book. I've been trying to get the author of that book to come on our podcast because I just love, he's written a few other books. I'm a big fan of his mindset. So John Warlow, he's also written a book called Built to Sell, which is fantastic and very well known in the entrepreneurial community.
One thing I wanted to make sure I talked about is the impact on case acceptance. So just for discussion's sake, say I have $1,000 crown and my savings for a member would be 10%. Can you talk about that impact when presenting fees and financial arrangements to patients?
Yeah. So there's a huge psychological component to a membership program, right? And the example that I'm going to say is it's outside of dentistry, but we can apply it. And then we'll talk about some dentistry examples as well. So I'm an Amazon Prime member. They've got their membership program, as most of the world knows. And I'm sure are you on Amazon Prime, just out of curiosity?
Addictively, yes.
Okay. So you get it. So I am addictively on it as well.
The power of being able to click a button and have something at my door in 2 days is just still fascinating to me.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? So, they've pioneered the membership model. If you think about it, they've really made it a concept what they had before is what we call the transactional business model, which most dentists have, right? So they were smart enough to create a $1 billion industry just from their membership program. It's a $1 billion industry from the Amazon membership program.
Wow.
Provides billions of dollars of recurring revenue, right? It's amazing. But they, so I'm a member, and a couple months ago I was looking for a TV, and I just went down the street here from my office and went into Best Buy because it's just close and I needed a break from the office. So I went into Best Buy. I'm looking at TVs. I'm like, oh, I found the TV that I wanted, right? And I'm like, okay, this is great. But I have a membership with Amazon. So while I was at the store, I pull up my Amazon app. I found the exact TV. I get it at a discount. I get it at so I get it at the better price. And they're going to ship it to me. I don't have to haul it to my – don't have to put it in my little car, and right? Because I don't have a big car. I've got a little car. I don't have to put it in my big car and haul it back to my house, right? So I click buy now on Amazon, and that's the power of case acceptance that happens in a practice. Now, we use the word case acceptance in dentistry, but the business word is conversion. Mm-hmm. Right. So Amazon was able to get me to convert or accept their product, right? Because of the membership program, right? And keep in mind, I was right in the store with Best Buy, who now price matches, right? But I'm like, well, I'm paying already for at the Amazon Prime yearly membership. So, I mean, I don't need a price match. I just need to buy from Amazon because I've already paid for it, right? The same mindset applies to the dental practice. A patient pays the yearly or monthly fee to get access to certain discounts and benefits to the practice. And the same psychological effect happens as what happened to me sitting in Best Buy, right? The same thing when I was talking to one of our practices here in Utah has built their membership program. They're one of the fastest ones that I've seen. In like a month, they signed up 200 patients, wow, and practices, which is pretty cool. And I drove up there. It's actually 3 hours away from my office. And one day I just planned a little trip to go up there and visit the office because I was very interested in what they were doing and how they were doing it. And the concept of – or the, not the concept, but the topic of case acceptance came up. And I'm like, so doctor – is this helping your case acceptance? Because that's obviously important because that's another form of revenue that you're going to get from a membership program, right? And an aide, he's like, Jordan, I have been like amazed at how much it's helped us with case acceptance. He's like, we've had mostly men in their community that have gone to the practice and have never accepted a crown or any work. But since they were on that membership program, he's like, I've been amazed at the amount of people that did work with me that wouldn't otherwise, right? So he's like, we're making money from our membership program, and then we make money from, you know, higher case acceptance or conversion, right? And I believe trying to create some systems in our software to help track that and give it like a data point. Mm-hmm. But right now it's just mostly been, you know, verbal and communicating with our practices, but it's that psychological effect. And part of that is there's a book called, I think just Influence. And I believe Dr. Phelps talks about this one a lot.
Cialdini, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He's also got one that's called Persuasion. And I'm a big fan of him as well, like much like Dr. Phelps. He's always – that book is very popular in the business and entrepreneur community. And I've read it multiple times. But if you think about what a membership program does when it comes to influencing people to accept treatment, right, it's using what we call the principle of contrast, saying, patient, since you're on this membership program, if you weren't on it, you would have been paying this price. But since you're on it, you're paying this price, and it's a discounted price usually. And that's called the principle of contrast, right? Showing them that what they would have paid if they weren't on it, what they would pay when they're on it, right? And you could use this when you're trying to sign up patients as well. And I believe that that model and a few other topics from that book, Influence, which is another one I highly recommend reading, I believe that just a membership program in general has organically those principles that we learn from the book Influence to influence people to buy, right? So I believe just the psychology behind it helps, you know, create more work from the patient, right, with case acceptance. So those are my thoughts there and kind of what I've seen with some practices. And I don't know. I know you have your membership program, doctor. What have you seen an increase with case acceptance with the patients that are on your membership program?
Again, it's anecdotal, but
yeah,
literally I see no resistance to the membership plan, and I mm-hmm. see extraordinary case acceptance when presenting the treatment plan. I think some of that is the confidence it gives the presenter. They feel good about saying, look, here's what it could have been. This is what it is. And it's nearly automatic case acceptance for us.
Yeah, and I talk to Dr. Mark Costes about this all the time because he's got a membership program. And my last phone call with him like a week or two ago, we kind of talked about that. And he's like, man, it works like a charm. I'm like, yeah, it's because it's using all these principles of influence to influence that patient, right? And the cool thing is patients already have that mindset that they need to be paying something to get a discount, right? So use that to your advantage because you could really build an amazing practice, the fee-for-service practice that most practices dream about. Like that's really attainable with a membership program. So those are my thoughts on case acceptance.
Yeah, I love it. And you talked about win-win-win. Interestingly, it's a philosophy I use every day in leading my practice is, does it serve the team? Does it serve the practice? And does it serve the patients? I always try and make all my decisions fit in that little triangle. And this membership plan, like we just discussed, serves the practice. It gives teams something to get excited about. And it serves the patient and gives them. And
absolutely.
So the boxes that it checks is all one of a we talk about the business concepts, surely, but is it a value? Is it a service? And it's clear through our discussions today that it really clearly checks that all those boxes. And I can't think of a patient that really shouldn't be interested in it. The only patients that aren't served in my practice are the travelers that are, clearly one-off patients that just have a toothache and need to get back home to see the regular dentist. I don't offer it to them, but there are patients who are even insured who would be better off ditching that plan and being in the membership plan, many of them. So it's a real value and a real service to the people that we built our business to serve.
Yeah. And that's why I will never buy dental insurance because the doctor that I go to down the street here that I've been going to for years, he just signed up with our software to create his own membership program. So I'm like, I'm going to be your first patient to sign up for that membership
patient
program
because one.
I believe in it and I don't pay insurance, right? I've noticed since I've left the lab, I haven't been in touch. I haven't been going to doctors, the dentists a lot because when you're at the lab, you go see dentists all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's who you're working with directly. And most of my customers are across the nation. So it's hard for me to go see them all the time. But I've noticed since I left the lab, my going to the dentist has been kind of a challenge for me. I go once a year and I know what will happen if I continue doing that and becoming a lazy flosser like I have been. but I'm excited for the dentist that I go to for him to create his membership program because I'm going to be on it and immediately once he gets his plans together and I'm going to, I guarantee you, I'm going to be going to my appointment 2 times a year. Right. And because I've gotten to that habit of going once a year because I don't have dental insurance. Right. So there's another mindset of me and hopefully I could, take better care of my teeth on this membership program. So,
there's one question that I really want to make sure we touch on before we close out and talk a little bit more about Boom Cloud and the specifics on that. I think we've made it clear to listeners that a membership plan is the gem, the key internal marketing tool that we can all have in our practices. The question that I wanted to ask you, are you seeing dentists successfully use this as a patient attraction tool, an external marketing tool?
Absolutely. We've had a handful of practices that they sign up with Boom Cloud, and most every doctor and staff that I talk with, they're like, we have been wanting to do a membership program for years, but we've never had a system to help us create it and manage it because there is a lot of administrative burdens that can come with a membership program. Much like, and the concept is what I like to talk about is, well, years ago, you didn't have a practice management software and you used paper and did all that stuff. And that, I'm sure a lot of doctors swore by that and said, we could use paper to manage our whole practice, right? And all of a sudden, the software tool comes out and they're able to automate a lot of tasks and make it more streamlined, right? Sure. And that's kind of what I look at what we've kind of done in the membership community because memberships have been around for a long time. My mom, when I was a young kid, her doctor had a small membership program. But I believe in systems and processes. If you don't have those, it's very hard to manage something in any type of business, especially a practice where office managers are spread too thin. But yeah, we've seen a lot of practices have a great success, and we've had some practices that tried starting 1 year ago and it failed, and now since they have a system to work with, it's flourishing, right? And I think that's with anything in a business, we have to have systems and processes in place that are either proven or you know, they can help build something in a practice, because you just need those systems. I look in the early days when I managed my dad's lab, he used a paper system. It was a system, but it was a very inefficient system, right? So I believe that that's what we're helping solve with managing a automatic membership program that helps drive recurring revenue to the practice. So basically what our software does is we help practices create, organize, and automate an in-house membership program. And I've added another word in there. We also help you track with metrics a membership program, because I'm also a big believer in data and understanding numbers. So we've got a fantastic dashboard that keeps evolving as we go, which that's one thing I love about software. It just evolves, right? it's a fun product to be a part of. But you know, we track monthly recurring revenue, yearly, the collected amount, you know, in the current month. And then a piece of our software, we understand that if a patient's on a membership program, well, they're going to need, they're probably going to need some form of financing if they get treatment done, right? Mm-hmm. So a part of our software, we have an in-house financing system where a practice can enter in a balance and add an interest rate and collect interest from the patient versus sending it off to like CareCredit, discounting it, whatever, 10%, and then having CareCredit have that passive income stream, right? Which is interest. So we have a tool there that we put on our platform that we're continuing to evolve. But that's because I'm a big believer in, again, self-reliance, right? So I believe that a practice should and could be making another revenue stream just off interest if they decide to put a patient on a payment plan. So that's another thing that we do that just comes with our software. But in the dashboard, and you can look at it by coming to our website, or you can even schedule with one of our reps. We do live demos as well. But we track all these metrics for you, including interest collected, if that's what you're doing with the financing plans. But then we track like lifetime value, active members, new members that have signed up this month, new members that have signed up this month through the website, because we do have a portal that connects to a practice's website that we track that as well. But yeah, I'm a big believer in having a system to help build and grow or scale a system in a practice, right? Because one of the biggest problems that we're solving with membership programs is the scalability aspect of it. If you're using paper or having your staff manually run cards each year or each month, well, that's a really inefficient process when we know that software and computers can help us with that, which means it creates a bigger administrative burden for the practice, which then means the staff is not motivated to grow it because it's just a burden to them, right? So I believe in our system can help a practice scale it and not have it become a burden, because we're seeing like the example I said earlier, we saw in 1 month a practice signed up a little over 200 patients. Now, if you're doing that all manually, that would be a challenge. 200 patients, that's a lot of patients. So that's kind of my mindset of how, you know, our software helps practices install a program like this, but not only install, but scale, right? Which is a very important aspect, I think, that, you know, in the early days, a lot of practices didn't think about with their membership program. So the scalability of it is fantastic. And, you know, we also have we have an ACH function in the software that those practices that want to do like monthly plans, they're worried that credit cards will expire. Well, we've got a function there now, which is a newer one that allows to take directly from the patient's bank account, which means there's no expiration dates. There's no hassle, right? So that's the mindset we have, is how can we improve our software platform to make it easier for a practice to scale and onboard patients to this type of program. So that's kind of my thoughts with our product. I don't know if you have any specific questions, but yeah, those are my thoughts.
No, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. You mentioned your website, if listeners want to find out more and get more details, what's the best way to connect or reach out?
Yeah. So I say go to boomcloudapps.com, and that's spelled BOOMCLOUDAPPS.com. And it'll take you right to our website. There's a button up top that says schedule a demo. Go ahead and schedule a demo. I've got fantastic people on our team that have served in dentistry. We have some people that used to be at Solution Reach. We've got some former dental practice office managers that work with us. So they understand the concept, the industry. You don't have to worry about that. But then I do recommend, I have a free ebook that we give away as well that goes in detail of the concept. And you can get that at just by going to the site, it'll pop up. But if you want to go to it directly, you can go to boomcloudapps.com/book. And it'll take you to a download for that ebook that talks about the concept of membership programs and kind of my mindset. It tells my story as well, but it says I talk about a lot of my mindset with recurring revenue, and we go into detail there. But it's a great short read that you can read, you know, in an hour or two or less, depending on how fast you read, right? But yeah, they can get that there, or they can. We've got a number on our website they can call as well. But schedule a demo, you know, if that's something if you're wanting to grow recurring revenue and reduce dependence on dental insurance, we'd love to help you out and love to show you our platform and how it can help you. So that's where you can get a hold of us there.
Awesome, Jordan. What a fun conversation. My goal for every podcast that I release is to make sure that we're changing the thinking in some small or impactful way of listeners. Yeah. And you're certainly giving us a lot to think about as far as business owners. Your concept of self-reliance is something I think we perpetually have to remind ourselves of. And yeah, So thank you so much for what you're doing for our industry, my colleagues, and just helping us think at a higher level. I really appreciate what you've given us today.
Well, likewise, I appreciate everything you guys do, and it's fun. I love doing what I do. It's just been fun. So have fun out there.
Well put. Thanks so much, Jordan.
Thanks, David.
We've reached the end of this episode of The Relentless Dentist, but your journey towards an epic life continues. For more valuable resources based on today's episode, as well as show notes and previous episodes, be sure to visit RelentlessDentist.com and sign up for our mailing list. That's RelentlessDentist.com.